Пуст, а не подойдут ко мне. Do you understand what I just said? Unless you speak Russian, you would never be able to understand the words, let the little children come to me. Jesus wants to speak to all children in every land, and your church's Sunday school can help. For just $5 per book, your students can adopt an LHF mission project that will provide Bible storybooks to waiting children in other lands. Learn more at lhfmissions.org/children.
Hey ladies, just a note about this episode. We have a very transparent and honest conversation about suicide prevention and mental health. Listener discretion is advised. If you or someone you know is struggling, know that help is available. Call or text 988 or visit 988lifeline.org. You are not alone. Jesus loves you, and so do we. And now, here's our conversation with Cassie Moore. Listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Today we have a serious topic to talk about. It's been a while since we've done a one question interview, bringing in someone who has more experience than the three of us do on a certain topic and talking about something. And usually these end up being on the more serious end of things. And I think it's very important for us to dive into some of these topics occasionally. So Erin, tell us why we're here today and who we have with us joining us for this conversation.
Yeah. So this last spring, I attended the Missouri District Youth Gathering with the youth group at my church. And one of the sessions that I went to, one of the breakout sessions in particular, the speaker for that was actually our guest today, Cassie Moore. And she was talking on... She covered a lot of different angles of it, but the meat of the topic that was discussed is suicide and what we can do as adults caring for our youth to try and help and support them and also prevent this. How are ways that we can care for them and so forth? And I really appreciated the topic, and I thought, this could be a good conversation to have with us. So we have today Cassie Moore. She is an author. She is a speaker, obviously, and she is a fellow Lutheran lady.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Why don't you start? Because that was my brief thing from months ago. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about your background and the kinds of things you talk about?
Sure. Yeah. No, it's exciting to be here and to talk about a heavy subject, but I think one that is necessary to discuss and one that we have a lot of hope as Christians as we have this conversation. So a little bit about me. I live in Hood River, Oregon. So I am, like you said, I'm a writer and I'm a speaker and I do leadership consulting. So I spent 15 years in congregational ministry as a director of Christian education. And then I got my master's in organizational leadership. And I switched a little bit into coaching other leaders, working with other churches, other schools all across the country, speaking about a lot of this stuff that I've just seen and experienced in my career. So I've worked at some pretty large churches. So I've just had such a huge volume of students over my lifetime and over my career that I'm really passionate about working with other leaders. I'm a pastor's wife. So my husband, Tyler, is a pastor. And I do a lot of freelance stuff right now. But one of the things that's been very interesting, I have a kind of a foot in both different worlds where I'm in the secular world, but I'm also in the Lutheran world. So I work with my county, do some consulting with them and work with students, really students that are struggling, kids that have, for the most part, dropped out of school, and we're trying to reengage them and try to get them across the finish line to graduate. But I also head up a suicide prevention coalition. So it's a multi-county sort of project. We're trying to identify in our particular area, you know, how do you talk about suicide with people? What can we do to take some steps to really prevent that? Because it's been an issue in our community, unfortunately. So I've been in this world a lot. I'm not a professional counselor, but I have learned a lot by just necessity. And unfortunately, in my career with students, suicide has been an issue that's come up over and over and over again. So I'm glad that we're talking about it today.
And I think it's important to point out, as you said, none of us are professional counselors. None of this is professional mental health advice. This is all from your experience, our own experiences, just talking about mental health. But I think that's also important because this also, it hopefully is an example of how we as non-professional mental health counselors can and should talk about these subjects that can seem daunting. And so hopefully that will come across in this episode as well as we're talking with you.
Yeah, certainly. And it's something I've read before that it's actually people are more terrified to talk about suicide than talk about sex, which is another topic we don't always like to discuss, but it's so necessary to discuss this. So I want to say, I know it's not an easy thing to talk about. A lot of people have a really personal connection to it. So I'll just encourage anybody who's listening, you know, take the time if you need to step away at any point or just, you know, talk to somebody else, take a little breather. That's totally fine.
Okay, so for those who are new to this one question interview series, because we haven't done one of these in a while, we have the same question for every one of these interviews. And it's not the only question, but all the other questions are spinoffs of the one question. And the one question is this: what should Lutheran women be talking about that we are not talking about? So what is your answer to that question, Cassie?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. I think in the topic of suicide, what we are really needing to talk about is the fact that we have to have conversation about this. If we care for the people around us, we care for our children and our neighbors, this is something we have to talk about. And talking about it doesn't mean that it increases somebody's chance of committing suicide. That's something that in the training that I've done, I was a little bit surprised to hear that, but there's absolutely no research that indicates when you talk about this subject that you're putting it into somebody's mind. Actually, research shows if you talk about suicide, it actually lessens the chance that somebody's going to take action.
Really? Because there's this classic movie called Heathers that somehow gave me the idea that suicide was contagious. Is suicide contagious?
That's a tricky question to answer. So there's actually some research that indicates if somebody does die by suicide, and just for reference, the kind of the PC term is death by suicide. There's been a move lately to move away from like somebody committed suicide because it sounds like they committed a crime. Yeah. So the more kind of politically correct term now is death by suicide. So there's some research that shows if you glamorize it and you put up lots of, you know, placards and lots of remembrances and you're doing giant rallies for youth, that can be something that it sort of gives kids the idea that, oh, like, look how much attention this person got. So actually there's not a recommendation that you should glamorize it with lots of tributes after somebody has died by suicide, but it's certainly the research shows talking about it and having honest conversation and being real about your emotions with each other, that is all really beneficial.
That's a very helpful distinction, I think. Because we are one of the things that we're afraid of, especially as women of faith, is if we talk about it openly, it is more likely to normalize it and make it happen. And we don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what we have to remember is just there's no evidence of that. And it's hard. I think we draw a lot of our conclusions from just long held beliefs. You know, it's something like you said, mm-hmm. like something I pick up in a movie, something I heard from, you know, pastor back when I was 10 years old. You know, and sometimes we're speaking about things without knowing the facts behind them or the modern research. And we just have to be sensitive to the fact that sometimes we're human. We get it wrong. We have to have grace for each other in those moments. And we have to have a little bit more open mind. So there's a ton of great research out there on this topic, unfortunately, because it has been such a prevalent issue, especially in Gen Z. I do a lot of writing and speaking about Gen Z and Gen Alpha. So if you picture kind of those 20-somethings through teenagers, that's Gen Z right now. And then Gen Alpha is 13 and below. So we don't know a ton about Gen Alpha yet because they're not quite to the age where they're making their own decisions. But Gen Z, unfortunately, we know that they have huge rates of anxiety and depression, and suicide has gone up, you know, 30% in the last couple of years. So it's unfortunately something we just have to grapple with if we care about the young generation.
Yeah. I feel like in my own experience, just talking with other people of my generation and older, I think there's often a stigma around talking about suicide because, especially in the church, even I've heard longtime Lutherans express that, but this is an unforgivable sin. So if that's the case, then talking about it means you're talking about someone that you're confident is in hell, and that's a terrible, sad thing to discuss. And so it's really distressing. And so we don't talk about it. We pretend it didn't happen. There's like this whole shame component to it. But in talking with, you know, with my dad, who is also a Lutheran pastor, that isn't what the Bible says. That isn't what our confessions teach. We don't say that you are saved because you didn't do something. That's not what saves you. Jesus saves you. So is there anything else that I guess you can, since you've had more time to really talk about this discussion in Lutheran circles, is there anything else that you would add on how Lutherans should, I don't know, what's helpful to think about when talking about suicide from a, you know, theological perspective and encouraging perspective from what the Bible says and what we know about that?
Yeah, I think that's you really hit on the concept of shame in this conversation, which is that has been a huge barrier for us to have more open conversation. So what I would say, so officially we don't have a stance on the eternal state of somebody who dies by suicide, simply because we as Christians, as Lutherans, we say we don't know somebody's soul. We don't know somebody's walk with Jesus, right? So we are not going to speak to where they end up, heaven or hell. In terms of it being an unforgivable sin, Luther himself actually says, like, you know, I think somebody who is struggling with this issue that, you know, it's a sin issue. They've been overcome by the devil. So there's not an automatic condemnation that comes with it. You know, we're human. And the beauty of our faith is that Jesus was fully understanding of what we walk through, right? So we really shouldn't be speculating on where somebody ends up. We can say, you know, this is a serious sin. Obviously, it has a huge ripple effect on the people around you. It is a mistake, right? It's in a lot of ways, it's a really selfish decision that harms a lot of people. And that doesn't take away from the severe emotional turmoil that somebody's going through and the pain and the hurt, the depression. So we have to be able to hold a couple different truths in our hands at the same time with this topic. And the way I talk about it when I talk to young people, I say, you know, picture that I leave here after, you know, talking to you about Jesus, and I get in my car and I'm speeding down the highway and I get in a car accident and I'm killed instantly. Does that mean that because I was, you know, I was breaking the law, I was speeding at the end of my life here, I was, you know, I didn't have time to repent of this mistake that I was making, does that mean I'm automatically going to hell? Well, of course not, right? Like, we have faith in Jesus, and that is the beauty of our faith, right? That his love and his grace covers all of our sins, the things that we do intentionally and the things that we do unintentionally. So it's not something that, you know, you unfortunately are making a permanent decision when you take your life. But in terms of it, you know, dictating where we end up, that's a really hard thing for us to speak with any authority on. So it's something that I think we have to remember. We have a God of grace who understands us and who loves us and sees the struggles that we have and is sympathetic and surrounds us with people that speak truth and love and forgiveness to us when we need it. And that's a gift. We have to pay attention to that gift, and we can be that gift to other people.
Yeah, and relying on, I think, our identities in the state of being baptized, like coming back to like, I was baptized at one point in time. Like, I live as in a state of a baptized Christian, and remembering that when we have these instances of when close friends or family or people that we know die by suicide, I mean, it is a hard thing to wrestle with, like, for every reason that you're saying, but taking comfort in like that person is baptized. Mm-hmm. And relying on, as you're saying, relying on the grace of Jesus in knowing what we know and what we believe about what that means as being a baptized child of God.
Mm-hmm. And this is an area, I think, in which, you know, a lot of new light is being shed. Not that this is a new theological stance, but there was a time when churches, perhaps not the Lutheran church, but there was a common understanding that someone who died by suicide could not be given Christian burial, could not be buried in consecrated ground because of that ambiguity over the state of their immortal soul. But you're right, Martin Luther, I love this quote from his table talk, and I looked it up. This is not the translation that I've necessarily always seen this in, but it's a great quote. It says, "I do not share the opinion that suicides are certainly to be damned. My reason is that they do not wish to kill themselves, but are overcome by the power of the devil. They are like a man who is murdered in the woods by a robber." And it's a wonderfully compassionate understanding that when you suffer from severe mental illness, it can be deadly. So thank you. Thank you so much for that, and keeping our eyes fixed on the cross, that in all these cases, we are saved, not by our works, but by the grace of Christ who shed his blood for us, who gave up his life.
Yeah, I love that. And that's what I try to cling to in all of that, because it is hope. Really, hope is an incredibly powerful force. And I think it's one that's really, it is not something we pay attention to a lot, but it is something, it's the linchpin of our faith, you know, hope in things being better someday, hope in having an eternity with Christ. I think that that carries us through some really difficult times. And I think it's been interesting working with this county project, because a lot of the organizations that I've interviewed and I've talked with people, you know, all over my state at this point, a lot of them have said, you know, we're concerned that churches don't really talk about this stuff. And we see just the county has a lot of different training programs and resources, but a lot of times churches are not aware and they're not taking advantage of what's out there. And they're just afraid to dive into this world. And we see that as a little bit of a barrier to really as a community having a better conversation about this. So just kind of an interesting takeaway for me to hear somebody who's not a part of the church say, hey, we really wish churches were talking about this topic. It would be a bridge between us, you know, and other people, other organizations out there that maybe aren't Christian, but they still care about people. It gives us some common ground with each other. So I think that's an important thing to remember.
So then how do we talk about such a heavy topic?
We need to talk about it. Are there good and bad ways to talk about suicide?
Yes. And that's a really good question. So a lot of what I work with leaders to understand is that it's really key to have these conversations, but to really prime the pump by making it a safe place for people to be real. And I do this, you know, I talk about it a lot in the context of youth because I've worked with so many young people, but this really is something that really across the board, whether it's, you know, you're dealing with your parents or your friends, your peers, people in your church, people in your community, it's really sort of a useful skill across the board. So I always say, like, you really need to prime the pump by saying things like, you know, hey, we all struggle and it's okay to be real with me. It's not one of the things I say over and over again is that there's nothing you're going to tell me that's going to make me think less of you or it's going to change my opinion of you. And young people especially need to hear that from us because they're often, you know, they're thinking about something in their mind that they want to share maybe, or they want to open up about, but they're afraid of condemnation. They're afraid of judgment. So when we say things just unprompted to say like, you know, hey, I care for you. There's nothing that you could do or say that would change my opinion of you. There's nothing that's going to change my love for you. That's a very powerful statement. And I think we sometimes, especially as adults, we slip into this mindset of saying like, I need to tell my own story to these kids and tell them, you know, avoid the mistakes I made. Truthfully, like young people, they're going to make mistakes, right? We all made them and they're making them actively and they will continue to make them. And they're not often as interested in our stories as we think. And we sometimes slip into this lecture mode of like, oh man, I did this, but you know, it becomes a very self-absorbed sort of moment for us. So what I teach youth leaders is, you know, try to really ask a lot of questions. My personal rule is I talk about 25% of the time, and I ask the young people around me to talk 75% of the time, which means I have to have a lot of questions ready, right? I have to have a definite curiosity about what they're struggling with and what their world is, but I am trying to get somebody to open up and to share what's going on. So I'm going to ask a lot of questions. I'm not going to go in and lead with my own stories all the time. And there's a place to say, I struggled with this too when I was your age. That's perfectly appropriate. But let them ask the follow-up questions. You don't need to take over a conversation with, reminiscing your glory years as a 16-year-old in Iowa,
We're not glorious.
No. I would say, people survive middle school and high school is a toss-up, whether you liked it or not. But yeah, I think a lot of it is just you normalize sharing, right? You say, I have baggage, I've struggled, there are things that have been really hard for me, and I'm here for you. If you want to share some of that stuff, I'm not going to judge. I'm not going to be angry. And then you have to follow through. You cannot judge. You can't show it on your face that you're shocked or disappointed or surprised. You have to immediately lead with affirmation to say, thank you for sharing that. I'm so glad you opened up. That must be really hard for you to talk about. I'm so proud that you actually told me about it.
So if you're hearing something that is terrible and shocking, how do you say that truthfully? How do you what's the rationale that you can hold in your head so that you're not feeling like I'm lying to this person when I say thank you for sharing that with me. I'm so glad.
If a young person comes to you and sees you as a safe space and confesses to murdering puppies, how do you respond to that?
Yeah, great question. And I hope I never have a kid that comes to me and says I'm murdering puppies, because I don't know if 18. I could.
I picked that example on purpose because I didn't think it would ever actually happen.
It has not happened yet, but oh man, that would be a hard one because I do love dogs. So it honestly, a lot of it is awareness, and a lot of it is training yourself to not physically react and to say, I am going to be very neutral, because most of the time when somebody is coming to you with something that's severe, whether it's mental anguish or a huge mistake that they made or, something that's a big deal to them, they're very nervous. They're very anxious. And research will show us, right? They typically watch our eyes, but they're really watching our face to see, are you okay with this or are you going to react? So I sometimes will sit in front of a mirror and just pay attention to what are the things that I know, I know I have some nervous tics that can come across if I'm not really paying attention and training myself to not react. One of the very common ones, when somebody tells us something that's difficult, we often will cross our arms or will clench our hands together because we're feeling tension all of a sudden. And it's very normal to feel tension when somebody drops an emotional bomb on you. You're going to have a physical reaction to that. But if you can know that going in and anticipate it and say, okay, I know I'm going to sit back and I'm going to cross my arms, what would that communicate to this person who's sharing, some crisis that they're going through? Probably going to communicate that you're upset, that you're closed off. And you have to be really aware of that stuff. So it's just training, and it's realization to say, I am, no matter what they tell me, I'm going to say, thank you for sharing that. That was really brave. And then take it from there. I usually will go right into just how can we walk through this together? And that's a really key part of this, to say, I want to be with you in this. I just heard a horrible thing that you told me, but I'm not walking away. I'm not upset. I'm not scared off. And especially for those of us who work with young people, we are often the first person that they are telling, more so than their friends, more so than their parents. So we really have to be a very safe place for them to to bring that emotional burden, because they're essentially testing to see, can another adult handle this? So for youth leaders, especially, pastors and DCEs, people I work with little kids, that's something that's really important to remember, that you are often that first person that's being told. And I always laugh, I have heard everything from young people. There is just nothing in my life that shocked me anymore. I've heard horrific things that, things I've had to call the police and talk through. I've heard things that I had to report to protective services. I've had a lot of things where I've had to call in extra help. But that's part of the job working with people, right? We love people. We care for the people around us with the same love that Christ models to us. Sometimes that's very messy. So we have to be prepared for how that's going to affect us, because it will, definitely.
Yeah, I think understanding how you react to situations, especially if that's not your natural state to be like very aware. Like, I know I have a very loud face. And so when people tell me things, I know my face is going to do stuff that I don't even know is happening. But like,
actually, learning, it lights up. You are amazing at that.
But I mean, you're so right about people watch your eyes, because your eyes can't lie about stuff. It's very difficult. But practicing that, having your own friends who are willing to give you feedback of like, when you tell me something, what are you seeing in my body as I'm reacting to what you're saying? And being willing to take that feedback and being willing to understand how other people see you when you're talking to them is very important. And we've talked about before understanding things like containment, validation, affirmation, these relational nutrients that have come up before through a few episodes of when you're in that situation, knowing and understanding and embodying that it's about that other person. It's not about you. It's about what you're able to do for that other person, and being able to hold whatever they're telling you without making it about yourself and without making it worse, of being able to hold that with them. And like you said, walk alongside them in whatever is happening is so important. I love it.
And I think you hit a really key word, containment. That you can contain what somebody is throwing at you and not necessarily agree with everything they're saying, right? You are giving a gift of listening and letting them speak, but that time for correction and, you know, maybe disciplining, that's usually not helpful when somebody is revealing something really hard. It's usually, first of all, it's done better when you have an actual relationship with somebody, and it's a long-term walking with somebody. But it is such a fast way to shut somebody down when they share something really difficult and you either make it about yourself or you rush to tell them what they did wrong and you say, you know, like, I can't believe you did this. That shuts the door to any real meaningful conversation, unfortunately. And also if you rush to correct, I think when we try to fix something, that's an equally dangerous thing for us, because sometimes we just need to hear, we just need to contain and be there for somebody, and they're going to walk through and find the solutions themselves. But if we rush to say, I'm going to fix this for you and here's what we're going to do, we're taking power away from somebody to make their own choices, to solve their own problems. And that, you know, it's a key skill that you have in life to try to work through problems. And I think, unfortunately, we see, and I don't want to hit like gender too hard, but, you know, sometimes we see men will rush really quickly to like, I'm hearing a problem, I'm going to come up with a solution. Here's the solution. Here's what we're going to do. And, you know, it's not just men. Like, I actually probably am more prone to do that, my natural state. So I have to really pay attention to say, this is my anxiety coming out to say, I want to fix this for you. It's not my job to fix. It's my job to listen and to be there. And I trust that this is a journey we're taking together, and the Holy Spirit's going to equip us, right? And he's gonna light the path for us. But that means sometimes I have to get out of the way and not try to take over the situation. And that's perfectly fine.
So that leads me to the question, we can't fix this. There are no easy fixes for, you know, mental illness that has progressed to the point of suicidal ideation. Is it fixable? Is healing possible if people are out there suffering from this severe level of hopelessness and despair? How does healing happen?
Yeah, it's such a good question. It makes me think of a conversation I had with one of my friends recently, and she was talking about, you know, when she was in high school, she really, really struggled with suicidal thoughts and just was really in a dark place for a long time. And she said, I went somewhere and I heard somebody say, there is hope that this doesn't have to last forever. And just that phrase to say, this doesn't have to last forever, it's not permanent. That's something that completely changed her outlook on it. And she ended up, you know, going to counseling and opening up about it. And she's here now. She's happy and healthy now. So I think that's something we forget. You know, I talked a little bit about hope early on. I think we forget to offer the fact that there is hope, that, you know, though you struggle right now, it's not permanent. And they say suicide is actually, it's one of the most preventable forms of death, because all it takes is talking to one person and opening up to one person to usually set you on the path to not being so wrapped up in isolation and not being so alone in it, and and usually getting some help. Now, that means that that one person you tell has to be prepared to handle it correctly, right? To not rush to judgment, to not try to, you know, not to freak out. You need to know what you're doing. But it's also, I think that gives us a lot of hope. You know, there's a lot of just interesting research about the benefits of counseling and group counseling and opening up, you know, in Bible studies. It's something like one of the stats I saw was it's something like an average of 8 weeks if somebody goes into counseling. From the time they start counseling to the, you know, 8 weeks later, there's a 70% improvement in just depression. So again, like, this is not everybody's story, but if we look at the research, it certainly indicates a whole lot of hope that a lot of it takes, you know, changing something in your routine, opening up, not being so trapped in isolation. But, you know, when you start to take some of those steps, there are a lot of people out there willing to help and willing to help kind of walk through the difficult days. So isolation is, you know, statistically, that's one of the most dangerous things for a human being. And I think that's something our churches need to talk about, that it is such a dangerous, I mean, it increases the rates of everything, not just health problems, but mental health problems. You know, it affects every part of your life to be isolated. So it's an opportunity for our churches, especially, to say, you know, we don't stand for this. We don't want anybody to be sitting by themselves or alone by themselves. We're in this together as a community.
I appreciate your comments about the temporary nature of so many of these problems that seem so insurmountable. I've heard suicide described as a permanent solution to a temporary problem. Mm-hmm. And solution, of course, is a very dangerous word there. But the idea that whatever struggle you're going through, it will not last. And to be reminded of that, to be reminded that it will pass, whatever it is, mm-hmm. and to take a final step. Thank you for reminding us that whatever troubles you're going through, God will see you through them. And it may be really long and really hard and really dark, but it's not forever.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you had the quote about Martin Luther talking about people who have struggled with this. It's not like suicide is a new thing, but I feel like I hear about it more now. Are rates increasing right now? Or why is that? With isolation, I think about, you know, we came out of the COVID times, mm-hmm. and there was sort of forced isolation in a lot of cases, but we came out of the COVID time. So is it still a big issue? How big of a problem is it? And, you know, why is that? Is it with different groups especially? What can you say about that?
Yeah. Oh, I've got so many thoughts to say. Okay. You ready for some research? Because yes. I love
yes.
research.
Oh, we Let's love it.
We love it. Research. So, and I'm constantly researching this stuff and presenting about it. So thanks for letting me, you know, get into this here. So yes, the reason why you've heard a lot about suicide, especially the last probably decade, it is because the rates unfortunately have increased to the tune of about 30% rise in the last two decades. So that means from the time I was in high school to today's high schoolers, you know, it's a huge jump up. And unfortunately, we've seen a really sharp rise even in the last decade itself. There's some new research coming out right now that suggests it was the advent of Instagram and the forward-facing smartphone kind of hitting at the same time that we saw a really sharp increase, especially with adolescent girls, in just feelings of depression, anxiety, you know, self-harm rates skyrocketed, suicide rates, you know, went up from that point. So it's not a new problem. It's a problem that has probably gotten a little more public attention. And part of that is honestly Gen Z has forced the conversation. And a lot of people dog on Gen Z. I really admire a lot of things about them. They speak what's on their mind, right or wrong. We know sometimes it's not always right, but they're very open to say, you know, I'm struggling. It's okay to share that you're struggling. It's okay to walk away. I mean, we see this in Olympic athletes that have walked away for mental health reasons and come back and been stronger, right? So there's been a big shift, I think, to talk about this stuff. There are also research. So some of the research I've seen is as early as 2023. So this is post-pandemic. It's showing that about, if you look at the age segments in our country, 65 and up, about 20% of those people are experiencing depression and anxiety actively. So our older adults, right? 20%. If you go down to the next age bracket, so ages 50 to 64, about 30% are experiencing depression and anxiety. If you go down to like my generation, which is millennials, so ages 25 to 49, it's about 40%. And then if you go down to Gen Z, ages 18 through 24, it's about 50%. So about half of the population is saying, I am struggling with anxiety and depression. And, you know, we know from looking at Gen Z, there's a lot of research about them. You know, 50% of them are admitting, I am stressed all the time. Like, I don't know what it's like to not be stressed out. So do we have one answer for that we can easily solve? No, unfortunately, but there are things that we're starting to look at and starting to say, you know, maybe we should push back on technology all the time, right? Like maybe we should, you know, if 70% of Gen Z has been cyberbullied, maybe there's some steps we should take to police that a little bit better or put some boundaries up. So these are all really good conversations to have. And I think conversations worth having in our classrooms, in our families, but it's a more popular topic just because we're starting to hear the voices of young people that are very unafraid and very unapologetic to tackle these issues. And I think that's something we can learn from them to say, okay, like you tell me. And again, it goes back to my rule. I'm talking 25% of the time. They're talking 75% of the time. Very frequently, I would go into a classroom of middle schoolers and I would just say like, here's what I want to know about. You guys teach me. And they would get so into it. And they were just tickled to have an adult that actually had questions about their life and their world. And I learn a lot just by listening to people and inviting young people to be a part of the conversation. So I think we have to do that in our churches. We can't assume that we know everything or that the world is the exact same way that it was, you know, when you were in high school. It's just not, you know, it's very different. And I was in high school 20 years ago. It's incredibly different for students now. A lot of the same things are there, right? Struggles with identity and things that, you know, I'm trying to make sense of where I fit in the world. There are a lot of those things that are universal, but I also never had to worry about lockdown drills when I was in school, right?
So those are brutal on mental health.
Oh, terribly. And that's the number one fear of Gen Z. You know, 75% of Gen Z says, I am terrified of mass shootings. So we can look and right or wrong, we can form our opinions, right? But it is their perception of reality that we have to pay attention to. Their perception is that it's a very dangerous world out there. And that, you know, over the last two decades, we've seen friendship groups shrink way down. You know, I had a huge group of friends that I hung out with in high school. Today's students have on average 2 to 3 friends, and that's it. And a lot of that is just that it's a fear of the world around you. Now, who's really safe? Who can I be close to? Who can I open up to? So on the one hand, there's a lot we have to reckon with, but at the end of the day, it's having conversations with people and being real and being willing to walk into the difficult things and just say, like, you tell me, I'm not going to judge. I'm just here to listen. I'm here to remind you that, you know, you are loved, that Jesus loves you, and so do I. That's an incredibly powerful thing for young people, especially because they just aren't hearing it anywhere else.
We've talked about it before, but I feel like the church also offers just this unique place that does not exist in our culture, where you have a community that you are part of, that you are interacting with people from multiple generations on a regular basis. And I feel like a lot of times with the isolation and stuff like that, I'm just like, well, if you would only come to church, you would like it. But I don't know, that isn't necessarily connected, but it was what part of what came to mind as you were talking.
Yeah. Well, I will say, I think it is connected. And when I did my master's research was in how do you try to attract young people to an organization and how do you retain them? Because the levels of drop off for young people, it's huge. Like, you know, 70%+ of Gen Z is looking to quit their job at any one time. Like they don't have the same level of loyalty that we saw in other generations. And there's significant conflict in the workplace because for the first time, we have 4 to 5 generations in a workplace at a time, which, you know, it's a great blessing that people are living longer and maybe delaying retirement, but we've just never had this issue where we've had all these different generations in a workplace. So what's really interesting is the research shows all these different ages and backgrounds and, you know, different genders, like all of this together creates a much stronger organization. So whether that's a business or a church, it actually, it brings benefit to every age group that connects with each other. And I've seen it said before that the church is the last truly intergenerational place in society. And I think that's something that we should pay attention to and treasure. Like, I know the church that I'm at, we do a whole lot of intergenerational stuff, and I love it. Like, I was just thinking a couple of weeks ago, I was sitting next to a friend of mine who's 83 years old, and I was sitting next to him and then a 9-year-old girl, and we were chatting together at this, you know, this little community function that our church had. And I asked the 83-year-old Pete, I said, "Hey, Pete, like, what's your best advice for this 9-year-old girl here? Like, she's just starting out her life. What would you tell her as a number one piece of advice?" And he looked at her and he said, "Listen." And she just kind of sat there like blinking up at him. And I was like, "Oh, this is so profound." And he just said, "Listen, listen is, you know, that's how you learn in life. And that's how you connect, you listen." And I just thought, what a cool opportunity, even for me to hear this as a 30-something, to hear him say this to a 9-year-old. You don't get opportunities like that everywhere else. So it's something special that the church gets to bring, but we also have to intentionally create those opportunities. And we have to be real with each other, you know, and it requires sometimes, if you are that 83-year-old, for you to say, "I've struggled with this too. So tell me about what you're struggling with." And it can be that simple to really start the conversation, but it has to be one that's free of judgment and free of trying to show off or trying to impress. It just has to be, "I want to be real and I want to be a good, faithful person for you, a safe person for you." And you can do that at any age. You know, I have a lot of students that they counsel their friends who are struggling, and they know how to handle this topic of suicide. And that's a little bit of a sad thing, right? That I'm thinking these kids that are 12 and 13 and 14 have had to walk through their friends who are struggling with suicide. But on the other hand, what an opportunity for us as the adults in their lives to say, "Here's what you're really struggling with, and here's what I can speak to you. And I can speak with hope and with truth and with love. Those are blessings that I can share with you."
So listening to all of this and knowing the statistics and knowing that there are probably young people in my congregation who are struggling, just according to the statistics and the amount of young people that we have in my congregation, how do I, as an adult, I don't have children, so I don't have that automatic connection to maybe other families in my congregation, how do I become that safe space? Like, if I want to be that person, I want to be the person that young people feel comfortable coming to and feel comfortable opening up to, what do I do? Because, like, randomly going up to someone and being like, "Hey, tell me your story," like, that feels really inauthentic and kind of weird.
Are you currently struggling with depression or anxiety?
Right. Yeah, like,
I want to be your safe space.
That doesn't really feel right. Right. It's like, how do I do that?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I think it can look a little bit different for everybody, but I would say start with a place of very friendly curiosity, where you are encountering young people, and not in a creepy way, right? Like, we probably can think of people that were off-putting, but in a, you know, just if you see somebody at the coffee table, like, "Hey, you know, tell me about school. Like, how are things going?" And, oh, you know, you can open the conversation in a very authentic way. And even in a public place, you know, it sounds maybe creepy to say this, but, like, I'm an educator, right? I'll see little kids out, like, at the coffee shop, and I'll chat with their parents and with these little kids. And I think, again, we live a little bit in a culture of fear to say, "Oh my gosh, stranger danger, don't talk to this person, they're a creep." A lot of it is just being friendly as an adult and smiling. Like, smiling is a huge part of it, right? Like, to not be a grumpy Gus, but to smile and have an open body language. But I think, you know, you can start some of those conversations with just the people you see organically in your routine. But there are certainly opportunities to say, like, "Hey, like, maybe we can grab a cup of coffee sometime." Maybe if they're older, right? But maybe we can grab a cup of coffee, you know, in a public place, and you can bring a friend if you want. And, you know, let's just catch up about life. So one of the interesting things I've seen in research about like adolescent mental health is that they say kind of the magic number is two. So if you have two adults in your life outside of your parents who are caring that you can go to and you can trust them with something that's hard, that indicates a really healthy sort of a culture for that young person. They have a better chance at having a more secure sort of mental health outlook. So, you know, it might take some time to develop those connections, but we can probably all think of at least a couple of young people we have contact with that we can just start to develop that organically. And again, I don't think that you dive right into the, like, you know, tell me, are you struggling with this issue? There might be an opportunity for that. But, you know, I've actually had a couple of conversations with people online, like total strangers that I just noticed something that they posted seemed off. And I messaged them privately and just said, you know, hey, I know that you don't know me. I know this is really weird. But if you want to talk about anything, it seems like maybe there could be something you're struggling with. And in literally like in two different cases with total strangers, they both opened up and said, like via direct message, I'm suicidal and I don't know what to do with that. You know, and I think sometimes when you work with people, you just develop that radar to say like, somebody's not okay. And I need to double click on this and pay attention to it. And that doesn't mean that everybody is going to be doing that, but there might be a situation in life where you observe something. And I don't think it hurts to just say, I know this is weird. I know we don't know each other that well, but I just want to check and see, are you okay? I won't judge you, whatever you say. You know, you can totally ignore me and shut me down. But if you are struggling, I am happy to talk through this with you. You know, that's being the light of Christ in the world around us. So it's a gift we can give.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think this is an area in which, well, I'm going to be stereotypical here, but Lutheran women have a strong role to play. Not only do we have the compassion of Christ in our hearts, but many of us have really non-threatening personas. So that, you know, that mom bod can be a real asset in striking up conversations that get around that, ooh, danger, Will Robinson kind of reaction. That same, I hope that's not insulting or off-putting or stereotypical to say that, but I think of us looking just around the faces in this chat right now. We are not threatening people. Just going to say it. So use this. Regard yourself as having been equipped for ministry in this way to be able to ask those questions, build those relationships, become that safe person. I've seen my own children open up, like witnessed, heard conversations between my children and other mom-type women that look like me. Very momish, by the way, is my current fashion style, and been shocked at the things that my children would tell these other adult Christian women that they never told. I'm so thankful that you were in their life to hear this, and I'm privileged to have been able to eavesdrop on this conversation and know that it happened. So,
yeah, anyway,
weird little aside, but. Don't think that you're not equipped for this work, because you are.
And even though it's intimidating work in a lot of ways, it is something that the Holy Spirit gives you the words, right? And creates those opportunities for you to connect. And I think you just have to walk forward in faith and trust that He's lighting the path in front of you. And every step of the way, He will light the next step for you. And like, I think of like, I talked to a random lady years ago in a TJ Maxx. We were both picking out wrapping paper at Christmas time. And we just started sort of chatting with each other. She's much older than me. And somehow, I don't even know how we got there. She was standing in the aisle holding her wrapping paper, just bawling, talking about her adult son was really struggling and she was really struggling. And just, I didn't even know her name. And here I'm standing, like listening to her, like her life story. And it was just struck with like, I don't even know what I'm saying. I don't even know how we got here, but this is what she needs. And I'm going to meet that need that, you know, somehow God has guided me to this spot. And I'm just going to respond with the words that He gives me. And I still don't know her name. I don't know whatever happened. You know, we parted with a hug and she left and I left. But sometimes we only know just a moment that we have in somebody's life, and we don't know how the rest of their story plays out. But I think someday we will know. We'll see more of this sort of the bigger narrative of where we have been in somebody's life and how we've been a part of their story. And you have to be content with knowing that, you know, I might just be playing a little tiny role for a day, but that conversation can change somebody's life, you know, for eternity. And what an exciting prospect to consider that we have a hand in that, that we get to experience that little bit of heaven on earth. I think that's a really special thing.
Yeah, never underestimating the power of just saying something, of noticing somebody, noticing something. I think a lot of times, especially for introverts, like it's hard to like just say the thing of like of noticing something, but it can be so powerful for somebody who maybe, I mean, you don't know what people are going through. That power of just like that person may feel really alone that day. And just by you saying hi or smiling or like asking how they are, like that can really change a person. Like I have to remind myself of that, even though I'm a very friendly Midwesterner when I'm out at the store and I'm randomly talking to people. But just reminding myself of that too, as an introvert who doesn't always want to say things, it is worth it to be a little uncomfortable to just say the thing to somebody and to notice a person in whatever way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even stumbling through it is better than saying nothing. And I think that's something that we're, especially like our German Lutheran heritage, we have kind of a stoic, like, I can't show emotion. I can't, like, I got to have a stiff upper lip. You know, I've heard a lot of really tough things. I still will cry when people share things. I know, like, Aaron, the conference that you were at, I had a young person come up to me and say, you know, after I spoke, she just started bawling and said, you know, I've been bullied so much and I have no reason to live anymore. And I cried hearing her share this. And we walked through it together, and she's, you know, she is happy and healthy and in counseling now. Like, I've stayed in touch with her. But stumbling through it is better than not saying anything at all. And I think, like, I think back to when I was right out of college. We had a seventh grade student who died by suicide at an area middle school right across from our church when I was working in St. Louis. And we had a big gathering for all of the middle school students at that school at our church to say, you know, come and you can talk about this. You can pray. You can do crafts. You can talk to a counselor. We brought in like a big group of people to kind of just be there for these kids. And I was floating around because I was the youth leader. And I saw this one boy just sitting by himself on a bench out front. And all the other kids were kind of just looking at him. And I thought, like, you know, it's just something, like, I don't want any kid to sit here by themselves after what just happened at their school. So I went over and sat on the bench next to him. And he just was very blank, like staring out at the road in front of us. And I will never forget it. It was a little bit embarrassing, but I said, you know, like, how did you know this girl who died? And he just looked at me and he had the weirdest expression on his face. And he said, it was my sister. And it just like gutted me. And I sat there and I thought, my goodness, like this kid has been sitting on this bench by himself in the midst of all of his friends. And nobody has had the guts to approach him because they don't know what to say. And I don't know what to say either, but maybe it's enough that I'm just sitting on the bench with him. And I don't remember what I said to him. I just remember having an overwhelming urge to say, you know, like, you're not alone, and to physically show that, you know, maybe I don't have the words, but I have the presence to just say, this is not too much for me. I'm not scared off by your pain. I'm here. And I think that our presence, even if you're an introvert, your presence can sometimes be more than enough for somebody. So don't be afraid to just physically be in there. And if you have to be emotional, you know, you're human. And that can be something that you connect on too. So don't be afraid to be real. That's probably my takeaway advice for all of this. Like, don't be afraid to be real and to walk into the difficult situations with people, because God blesses community. He wants us to be in community with each other. It's a gift that we get to bear each other's burdens. So it's something that it's a privilege for us, even as hard as it is, it's still a privilege and it's still a blessing for us.
So with all of this, what sort of resources do you recommend for people who want to understand more, they want to better equip themselves? what would be recommended resources for people who are working with youth or who just have youth in their life? They aren't necessarily in a formal capacity, but they're like, I want to be ready, as Sarah was saying. Like, what can we do to help with that? What are some of your suggestions?
Yeah, there are a lot of really good resources out there. So for those of us who are Lutheran, Youth eSource is a really great, so it's youthesource.com. It's all LCMS writers. So I'm one of the writers for that. I've actually written a number of the suicide resources on that website and had to use a lot of things that I wrote over the last couple of years. But that's a really good place to just get talk sheets, devotions, discussion questions, Bible studies, all sorts of just really helpful, very practical kind of tools for working with young people. In terms of like a crisis sort of hotline, most states have this now, but 988 is kind of the new crisis hotline. So you can either call or text 988, or their website is 988lifeline.org. So the goal with their organization is it connects you to a real person. So no matter if you're dealing with, you know, crisis or with thoughts of suicide, they will usually stay until you are in a stable place. They'll make sure to get you the help that you need. So I always have that one as a kind of throw out to young people, like 988 is a good number to text or call anytime, day or night. And then in terms of training, again, because suicide is such a difficult thing for so much of us to talk about, it helps for us to be a little bit more equipped and a little bit more confident to have this conversation. So there's a really great group that the program is called QPR. So it's QPRinstitute.com. So it's not a Christian organization, but it's a research-based training for how you talk about suicide. And it basically, they do QPR. So it's question, persuade, and refer. They think of it like CPR. So if everybody knows how to do CPR, it increases the chances of somebody living. So QPR is, it's approached much the same way. It's a very easy to understand and very fact-based sort of the practical nuts and bolts of how do you recognize when somebody is suicidal and what do you do? You know, what kind of questions should you ask them if you think that they might be struggling? And then what do you do next? So that's something that in a lot of places, like in my community, that's offered for free. So it's just a matter of researching it a little bit and figure out when it's offered in your town. And I've had a number of churches here that have actually done that training. So they'll have somebody come out to their church and do the training. So there are wonderful resources out there. And in a lot of ways, you know, this topic of suicide, there's a lot of secular research that's really good, but there's also a different part that we bring to it as Christians with the hope piece. So we are able to combine those pieces and I think really have a profound impact on people. But it's also something like I enjoy talking about it and training people. So if you're ever interested in connecting with me, I do a lot of just in-service stuff for churches and schools. So you can always holler at me too. CassieAHMoore.com is my website. But really just Googling, there's a lot of good stuff state by state that will give you some good resources to start with.
I really appreciate you highlighting the QPR. I'm sure all our listeners know, maybe you do too, that my husband is a Navy chaplain and is one of the components of his job is actually leading suicide prevention training. As you said, so many of these young people are having to do this work for their friends. And that is certainly true in the military, that their goal is to train, you know, of course, have the mental health professionals on hand and available to help, but to train the rank and file to know how to recognize and be equipped with questions and strategies for how to respond. And I have often thought to myself, wouldn't it be great if churches were this intentional and proactive and just equip it? Because you're right, there are simple things you could do and say that can make a big difference in a moment of crisis beyond simply, oh man, you need help. You should see a counselor about that. So it's really encouraging to know that this kind of training is so readily available to the civilian population because, you know, the military takes it really seriously. They realize they have a suicide problem. But I was really interested doing some research before this episode to find out that when you adjust for age and sex differences, military suicide rates for the last 10 years aren't that different from the general population. Like, there's this perception that the military has a huge suicide problem, and they treat it like mm-hmm. they do. Thank goodness. But we all have this problem, and it's something that we can all be trained, like CPR, how to recognize and respond. Be equipped, be empowered, be the church.
I think you kind of hit on, like, it is a problem out there. And if we just stick our heads in the sand, it does not do any good. And I just bought an old Model T. So I bought like a 100-year-old car like this weekend. And I've been kind of learning how to fix it up again with this 83-year-old guy I'm friends with from church. He's super into antique cars and I wanted to get into it. So I asked him to just teach me everything that he knows. And I happened to find like a really good deal on an old car. So I bought it having no mechanical experience whatsoever, but learning as I go.
I love it so much.
I'm very quirky, but like I love adventure. So it's a whole new adventure to learn like, how do I take care of an old car? But like for me to look at this car and one of the pieces is just not working at all. So the car won't even start. And I just look at it and think like, I could pretend like this is not an issue, right? I could pretend like there's no problem, but I'm only hurting the car if I try to force this. And it's the same with us, right? Like if we pretend like there's no problem and we just keep going, it only hurts us in the end. And it usually hurts the people around us because our junk is bleeding out all over the place and it's affecting everybody else around us. So, you know, you have to be honest about the problem and take the steps to fix the problem and then run the car or run your life the way that you should, the way it's intended to. But if you just pretend like nothing is wrong and you just keep going, it does more damage. So, you know, again, it's just honesty. It being real and saying we don't have it all together. Like, even though we are in church, we are not perfect people. And thank God, because then we wouldn't need Jesus, right? So we're not perfect. And that's okay. We're in it together and we're not here to judge each other. The older I get, I think the more I don't judge the people around me because I've just heard so many difficult things that people have walked through. And I think if you are becoming more and more judgmental, you probably need to work at surrounding yourself with some people that maybe don't look like you or maybe don't, you know, don't have the same life as you. You probably need to broaden your horizons a little bit, but life is about having some compassion and some grace for each other. And that's our whole brand as Lutherans is grace. So it's something we get to offer that nobody else does.
This was a wonderful conversation. Really glad we were able to have it.
Yeah, this has been such a fantastic and necessary conversation. I'm so glad you could join us today, Cassie. Thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thanks so much for having me. And you guys had great questions. So I appreciate the conversation.
And of course, we will. I know we've thrown out a lot of resources, and I think the three of us also have some other resources that we've gathered. So be sure to check the show notes for a probably lengthy list of resources, things that you can read, you can do training, you can watch videos, whatever. We'll throw all those in the show notes to make
sure
you guys.
I've even got a link to like a crisis hotline staffed by LCMS deaconesses.
Oh, yes.
Which is pretty awesome.
That's true. We haven't mentioned Word of Hope yet. So that is another fantastic resource that we will throw in the show notes for you. Ladies, you can join us in our Facebook group. We want to know your experiences, any stories that you have, any ideas and advice that you have from your own life experiences. We would love to know that in our Facebook group, the Lutheran Ladies Lounge. You can also follow us on Instagram at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. We'll have some follow-up conversation on there this week after this episode drops. So be sure to follow us there. You can find all of our podcasts at kfuo.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at kfuo.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at kfuo.org/give. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast is underwritten in part by Lutheran Heritage Foundation. LHF translates, publishes, distributes, and introduces books that are Bible-based, Christ-centered, and Reformation-driven. Learn more about their global ministry and how to support their projects at lhfmissions.org.